Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for being part of our day, for hanging around with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And thank you for all of you who did recently and who wrote those nice notes saying how much you enjoyed the website and how much you enjoyed the newsletter. That means a lot to me because we put a lot of work into what we do, and it's always good to get some nice feedback. And those of you who write to say that maybe there's something that you're not quite happy with, I appreciate those. We appreciate that too, because that helps us to get better. Because you know us, we're not perfect, but we are seeking excellence. And somebody else who's like that, he's not perfect, but he does seek excellence, is our good friend Charles W. Cadlick, our longtime member of our Brain Trust, the author of Dow 100,000 Fact or Fiction, and a managing director at J&W Seligman in New York City. He's our good friend. Chuck, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. It's, as always, delighted to be with you and your audience.
It's a pleasure to have you back, as always. Chuck, I've been telling the audience that you were going to join us today and that you were going to tell us about the economy that we have and the one we're going to get. So no big buildup or anything like that, right?
Perfect. Perfect. Well, the one we have right now is we are in the midst of not a recovery, but we are well into an expansion phase, and we are experiencing above average growth. And my anticipation is that we will continue to be surprised by the strength and health of the U.S. economy. And we can talk about why.
Yeah, let's do that.
As much as you want.
Why do you say that?
Well, let's think about what is it that created this sudden surge of growth. I mean, in the four quarters ending in March, we had the best growth rate, nearly 5%, since 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there were two significant contributors to that. One is we got a real tax rate reduction last year, signed by the president in May, retroactive to the 1st of 2003. And anytime you reduce the barriers to trade, people find ways to do more business with each other. Tax rates are like tariffs. They fall on domestic economic activity. A personal income tax raises the price we have to charge our customers relative to what we take home for our families after tax. And by reducing that barrier, by taking the top rate from 38.6% to 35%, especially important for small business people, and the middle class tax rate from 27% to 25%, we dramatically reduce the barriers to trade. And every time we've done that in the United States, we've always gotten more trade, that is, an acceleration in economic growth. So that's reason number one.
And we're still, even though those tax cuts, they were imposed, or not imposed, they were made available a year ago, as you say, retroactive, but we're still reaping daily benefits from that, aren't we? I mean, it's compounding, isn't it?
And the reason is because, unlike a tax rebate, which does nothing to change the barriers to trade, a tax rebate just takes money from some people, the government borrows the money, and then hands it back to the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the effects are short-term and, for the most part, frankly, illusory. But a tax rate reduction is a permanent reduction in barriers to trade, and as a consequence, the benefits persist for years.
You know,
we are still benefiting from the tax rate reductions of last year.
You know, Chuck, the reason I believe in supply-side economics is because when I talk to small business owners, and I've asked this question in the United States, and I've asked it in more than one country abroad, I've asked small business owners, if you had more of the money that you pay in taxes, if you were able to keep that money in your business, if you were able to keep it yourself, what would you do with that money? And without blinking, without hesitation, without a moment of reflection, every one of them overseas and in America have said, I put it back in my business. Not one of them said, I would go buy a new car, I would take a trip around the world, or I would buy a new diamond ring, or whatever. Every one of them instantaneously said, I put it back in my business.
You know, that's a natural, normal human impulse.
It's genetic for small business owners.
And this whole notion that somehow high tax rates are on the rich is preposterous. The fact is, rich people take care of themselves.
Right.
I mean, look at Teresa Hines. I mean, she has a tax rate of 15%. She has income of in the millions. Why? Because she probably buys municipal bonds or whatever. I mean, I'll know, Jim. Here's I'll tell you. I'll call you up the day that I discover I'm rich, and here's my criteria. My criteria is that on January 1st, I'll tell my accountant what my tax liabilities will be for the rest of the year. When I have that much wealth that I can kind of decide what my tax rate will be, or my tax liabilities will be at the end of the year, that's what I call rich. Look, rich people take care of themselves. These high tax rates are on small business people, upper middle class, prosperous middle class people who are hopefully accumulating wealth, trying to take care of themselves and their families, preparing for retirement, wanting to build a business and the
many,
like.
Many of whom, Chuck, two, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago weren't rich. And because of their hard work and their good planning and their deferred gratification, they now may have become rich. 20 Till. We'll be right back with our good friend Chuck Cadlick after these messages. He's the author of Dow 100,000, Back to Fiction.
County fair in the country sun.
Everything. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you. Coming up in the show straight ahead, we've got Beverly Williams, who is our top home-based business expert. And then after that, Alan Friedman, who is our top technology expert. And then after that, we've got Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's just the top, period. And that's coming up in the show straight ahead. Somebody else is who's pretty high on my list is Charles Cadlick. Charles W. Cadlick is the author of Dow 100,000 Factor Fiction, and managing general, managing director at J&W Seligman and Company in New York City. Chuck, we were just talking. You were telling us about why the economy is doing well, and largely because of the tax abatement, but also it's just a natural progression of coming out of 3 years of tough times.
By the way, Jim, I want to stay on top of the economy as we're talking here. No, I think the reason number two, reason number one, the tax rate cuts. Reason number two is the Fed restored price stability in the U.S. economy last year, although most of the series we look at, this consumer price index and the like, don't reflect it. The Fed created a deflationary environment in 2001 and 2002 in the U.S.
How'd they do that?
Well, they created a shortage of money relative to demand for money. And when you create a shortage of something relative to its demand, the value of whatever that would be rises. If the value of money goes up, that means it buys more of everything. And if a dollar can buy more of everything, that means the price level went down. And Alan Greenspan, in December of 2002, acknowledged this when in New York he had one of those great sound bites. He said the Fed had an infinite capacity to fight deflation. So he acknowledged it was a monetary problem because the Fed can solve it. And two is, of course, the reason they have an infinite capacity is they can print money infinitely. And that's what they did. Starting in 2003, they aggressively expanded the monetary base, the part of the money supply they control. It's on their balance sheet. And took us out of that deflationary squeeze that we were in. The reason that corporate profits were hammered the way they were, the reason small business people had so much difficulty carrying inventories and the like was because of downward pressure on prices across the board. Now, of course, they went a little too far. They stayed a little too easy, a little too long, and we saw commodity prices run. But the most encouraging data in the last 4 weeks has been the $50 drop in the price of gold from its peak. I use gold as a pretty good indicator for the general direction of monetary policy. And what this tells me is that the experience that we're having now as the indexes finally record the inflation is going to be short-lived. It's going to be short-lived, and we'll be in this period of stable prices. Now, here's why it's so important for the economy now and into the future. It's easier for people to do business when we have price stability as opposed to deflation or high inflation. And so if it's easier for people to do business, they always do more business. I mean, this is one thing I'd always bet on.
Right.
And so everything we read in the papers has it backwards. How many times have we read that growth causes inflation? It's just the reverse. Price stability permits growth. So when the Fed starts to blame, or if you ever hear a Fed board member or a pundit begin to say, well, the reason that there's inflationary pressure is because the growth of the U.S. economy don't let them get away with it. Just say, wait a minute. Doesn't price stability permit growth? Because it does. Historically, going back to 1950, during periods of price stability when consumer price index has risen less than 3% a year, we've always had above-average growth and above-average equity market returns. So my best sense is, given these highly sensitive price rule indicators like commodities and gold, is that we are in a period of prolonged price stability, and that also is associated with above average growth. And then finally, one little anecdote is that inventories have yet to grow relative to sales. Business people across the board keep being surprised by demand, so the inventory sales ratio is actually lower than it was a year ago.
Plus, we're getting a lot better.
But we haven't caught up. Mm-hmm. Normally, in a recovery, you get at least one or two quarters where inventories grow a little faster than sales, right, as people adjust to the new environment. Mm-hmm. We haven't even had that kind of cyclical kick to growth rates. So there could be a quarter before the end of the year we hit 6% plus real growth.
Wow. Well, of course, and I don't know whether you remember or not, but I predicted, and I'm sticking by my numbers. So far, I haven't seen anything that really caused me to back off of this. I predicted by December 31, we would have annual growth in 2004 of 5%.
I think there's a high probability you're going to be right.
Yeah. But now, one of the reasons why, and this is all good news, this is adding to your point, Chuck, about the economy and the future of the economy, is we're getting better and better, more and more small business owners. I mean, the big guys have been, not always, but for 10 to 20 years, they've been good at this. But more and more tiny, tiny small businesses are getting better and better at just-in-time inventory management. And that's helping what you're talking about.
And you absolutely. Look, the technological revolution continues to produce all kinds of prosperity by allowing us to use our capital more wisely, produce more with a given amount of capital. One of the scarce resources always is capital. And that, too, is leading to enormous increases in living standards. It's causing a lot of change, causing a lot of people to have to find new jobs, but it's also leading to much higher living standards.
And, Chuck, you know,
we'll be amazed 10 and 20 years from now how the technological revolution has completely changed our lives.
I think you're right. And another thing, Chuck, that I'm going to say that a lot of people don't agree with me on, and they don't understand it, and why I would say this, and this is that another thing that you never hear anybody, you hear very few people talking about, and that is the benefits that we're accruing right now from outsourcing. And I am an example of a company, my company is an example of a company that is benefiting from outsourcing. And when we come back after these messages, I'm going to get Chuck, I'm going to explain to you exactly what I mean when I say outsourcing, and we're going to get Chuck to talk about that, because it's not only globalization outsourcing, it's localization outsourcing. 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Chuck Cadillac is our guest. Charles W. Cadillac is the name on the book, Dow 100,000, Fact or Fiction.
And whatever comes our way. Yeah, I gotta go.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And Chuck, Jan W. Seligman has a group of mutual funds that are available from investment advisors and wirehouses across the country, don't they?
That's correct. Absolutely. And we're best known for our technology fund, the Communications Information Fund. But we have a full family of domestic and international funds. Wellington Management, one of the great managers based in Boston, manages our international and global funds, with the exception of our global tech fund.
You don't have a stock tip for us today, do you?
No, my tip is to have a good financial advisor, have a good plan that allows you to get through the ups and downs, short-term ups and downs of the market, and helps you achieve your goals, and to use diversified portfolios, including mutual funds and other investment vehicles, to do that in a very sure and steady way.
Right,
much better way to build wealth than chasing stock tips.
That's good advice. If we wanted to see a list of the array of your products, your mutual fund products, how would we do that?
Well, I'd invite your listeners to visit our website at Seligman.com, Seligman.com.
All right, check that out, folks, when you get a chance. And ask about them when you talk to your stockbroker or your financial planner. Ask them about the Seligman products. Okay, Chuck, the reason I said what I did about outsourcing, you used the term, you explained that more and more of us are able to manage our resources much more effectively and efficiently than we used to. And that's what made me think of the outsourcing thing. I am doing more today with fewer people much fewer people, maybe 10% of the people that I would have done the same thing with. If I could have done it 10 years ago, then I would have done it 10 years ago, with 10 years ago. And so what I'm able to do is my little organization is able to focus on what we do well. We bring in what I call vendor partners to do things that we don't do so well, but we still need. And we're outsourcing like crazy. Now, so far, it hasn't taken us overseas. But if there's an opportunity for that to happen, I'm going to do it.
Outsourcing, either in country or out country, creates jobs in the United States.
That's right.
Has to. Here's the reason I say that. And with full respect to in the process of the change, this revolution we're going through, some people lose their jobs and they have to find new jobs or even new careers. And some businesses go out of business as a consequence. But with full respect to that, net, it has to increase jobs. And here's why. First of all, if you have to spend less money for something, then you have more money to spend on other things that may be produced locally. Secondly, China ran the experiment of outsourcing nothing. From 1948 to 1978, they refused to trade with the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, we said, well, they're the low-cost producer of everything. Well, if that were true, they would have outperformed all other economies for those 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they fell so far behind Taiwan and Korea, South Korea and Malaysia and the like, that they began in 1978 to realize that they had to trade, to outsource some of the things that they wanted to the rest of the world. And ever since they started doing that, their growth rates have been among the highest in the world, and their employment growth has been among the highest in the world.
And they've become,
by contrast, Europe is far more reluctant, has many more barriers to outsourcing, and their job growth has been feeble at best.
Europe's growth projections, their growth prospects, is almost getting dangerous, isn't it?
Well, except that with the 10 new countries in the EU, they're massively reducing trade barriers, and that may actually. It's going to cause a lot of changes in Europe, dynamic, political as well as economic. But that's a huge plus for Europe, is the integration of Eastern and Western Europe.
I probably should have said, oh, Europe. But, you know, Chuck, you talk about how it creates jobs. My little organization helps to make payroll for people in other organizations at a number probably four or five times the number of people in my organization. And if it weren't for those people being available as an outsource resource, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing.
And we'd all be poor as a result.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a not only as a compliment to you and your show, but also as a generic statement. I mean, the way human beings create wealth is to find new ways to make each other better off.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they do that and they enter into a trade, it's called economic growth. But the human phenomenon is that we experience a better life. And what technology is allowing us to do is find more and more ways to effortlessly coordinate our actions with other people in ways that they're better off and we're better off. They get to pursue careers where their goal and their passions. We get to invent companies that fulfill our dreams. And this is why. Our living standards now are so much greater than they were 200 years ago.
Well said, Chuck. Thank you for being here today. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for doing a good job today.
Delighted. Thank you.
Chuck Cadlick, ladies and gentlemen. Charles W. Cadlick, author of Dow 100,000, Fact or Fiction. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.